have four cases this morning, and the first is numbers 19-3847 and 3892, Dansko Holdings, Inc. v. Benefit Trust Company, Mr. Bean and Mr. Hayes. And Mr. Bean, you are first.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Richard Bean. I represent Benefit Trust Company, and I would like to reserve, with the court's leave, 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Not a problem at all.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case involves Dansko and Benefit Trust Company's directed trustee trust agreement for the Dansko Employee Stock Ownership Plan. And this morning in my opening remarks, I'd like to do three things. First, provide you a brief outline of the facts that apply to both appeals, both ours and Dansko's. Second, turn to the decision of the district court on Dansko's motion for summary judgment on Benefit Trust indemnity claim and discuss that. And third, then turn to Dansko's appeal from the grant of summary judgment for Benefit Trust on Dansko's claim. So turning to the material facts that are not at issue in this case, the Dansko Employee Stock Ownership Plan was created in 2011. One of the agreements or documents that were a part of that plan was the trust agreement between Dansko and Reliance Trust. Reliance Trust was appointed as a directed trustee. Dansko wore two hats, as is common and expected in ESOP transactions.
One quick question is, on the why wasn't there a formal novation of that trust agreement when Benefit Trust came in as the trustee?
Well, the parties, it was a two-part agreement. Dansko executed or had a board resolution substituting Benefit Trust Company as the trustee. That was on June the 16th, 2014. And the next day, Benefit Trust accepted that appointment as the substitute trustee. And the parties engaged in the trust agreement according to its terms as it existed when Benefit Trust was substituted. Now, as to why, yes, Your Honor.
Could you talk about a little bit about that 2014? Was that an amendment? Was that a novation? How should we understand the relationship to the original contract?
It is, I think, in the parties' view and the testimony, almost a new agreement. So a novation rather than, but it is a substitution, and it could be viewed as an amendment, but all of the terms applied to both of the parties.
So it was not merged into the original agreement.
Benefit Trust was substituted for Reliance Trust Company and had all of the duties, all of the rights, all of the responsibilities of Reliance Trust Company.
In that one short page?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's what substitute means. And if it wasn't the case that we were substituted, then the trust under ERISA law would have failed. All of those terms had to be applicable.
There's a difference between a substitution via amendment versus a whole new agreement. There was no integration clause in 2014, right? The only integration clause is December 30th, 2011, correct?
The parties had negotiations prior to the substitution, and the integration clause applies equally and appropriately to Benefit Trust Company.
No, my question is, there is no document that was written after December 30th, 2011 that has an integration clause in it. Your position has to be that the 2011 integration clause is somehow reissued and re-entered into in 2014.
That is correct, by virtue of substitution. That is correct, Your Honor.
Why can't the substitution happen via amendment? Why can't we just view that as an amendment that added you in?
You could view it as an amendment, but we are the new trustee. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the trust fails, and a lot of bad things happen to Dansko and the participants in the plan.
Right. If it's an amendment, though, why should we read the integration clause as of 2014 rather than as of 2011?
Because we are the new trustee, and those negotiations would have been merged, and all of the duties, rights, and responsibilities would apply to us equally.
The trust agreement says it talks about prior and successor trustees and their responsibilities. Are you now an original trustee, or aren't you a successor trustee under the terms of that agreement?
We are a replacement and successor trustee, but I think that's a distinction without a difference.
But the point is, we look back to 2011 to understand who was the first trustee and the successor trustee. If we look back to that, and we don't, you know, and the signature line on the agreement was dated 2011, why don't we look back to 2011 as the time of the integration clause?
Because this was essentially a second agreement, a new agreement between these parties.
But you're a successor trustee based on the original agreement. The original agreement doesn't go away. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a successor trustee.
Well, let me ask, why wouldn't the integration clause apply? It certainly does, and we briefed that issue.
Maybe you're saying the same thing. You're saying that in 2014, you stepped into the shoes of your predecessor trustee, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And you adopted the 2011 agreement.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So there's no sense fighting that there, whether it's a new agreement or a sub, it's the 2011 agreement. The only difference between the 2011 agreement and 2014 is you have a new trustee.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And so 9.4, which is your integration clause, still applies to you just as it did in 2011.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Let me turn to, I think we've covered most of it. The only other provisions, there is an amendment provision, as the court noted, 8.1. 7.3 provides for the appointment of a discretionary trustee in all matters related to stock. And then 9.10 is the advancement clause, which is consistent with the indemnity clause. So let's turn to the indemnity clause.
Yeah, now Pennsylvania law says that we need to strictly construe indemnity clauses, indemnity provisions. So nothing here explicitly covers first party claims.
But Pennsylvania law also says that whether a loss is caused by a party to the agreement or a third party, the indemnity clause would apply. So unless a first party claim was excluded, this would be the indemnity clause would be applicable. Also,
what do you want from us on this? Do you want us a reverse, or do you want us just a remand?
I want you to reverse and enter judgment and remand for a determination as to the amount of damages that Benefit Trust is entitled to under the indemnity provision.
But doesn't the district court have to consider possibly parole evidence, which it hasn't considered, so why wouldn't that argue for a remand?
The integration clause would address that issue, and the parole evidence would be barred because it would, if it was used to vary the terms of the agreement. For example, Studdard, our witness, and a former Reliance Trust officer and attorney who drafted the indemnity provision explained the scope of the indemnity provision, and in doing so provided context but not parole evidence. On the other hand, the evidence that was suggested in the briefing by Dansko is parole evidence because it attempts to vary the terms of the provisions. Studdard explained the who, the what, the when, and the why. Who is any party? What is any claim? Why is because the risks of being a directed trustee are far greater than the remuneration for those services. That's why it's very broad. And the when, Studdard explained, the claims at issue here were specifically intended to come within the scope of this indemnity provision. The court's construction, we didn't argue it quite this way, seems to be a result in search of a rationale. There was no reason to go on the tortuous search for provisions within other provisions outside the indemnity provision to explain why it might not be enforceable in this circumstance. And as to the question of whether this is a first party claim or a third party claim, I would refer the court back to the two hats doctrine. If this was a first party claim, it would be a claim brought by Dansko in its role as plan fiduciary and plan sponsor, not for itself, but for the benefit of all plan participants. That would be the only appropriate way to look at this as a first party claim. This is really a third party claim because Dansko isn't seeking damages for the plan participants. Dansko isn't acting in a representative capacity as a fiduciary, claiming a fiduciary breach as to any act by benefit trust. It's seeking its own damages. So it is a third party claim, if the court were to make that distinction.
And what was signed in 2014? Who signed it?
It was signed by Mullen on behalf of, no, that's not correct. It was signed by the board. It was a board resolution, so I think Mr. Fox signed it. And another employee, Bradley Scaife, of a benefit trust company, signed the acceptance. So it was, the board resolution was on the 14th of June, or the 16th of June, and Benefit Trust accepted it on the 17th of June, effective on the date of the board resolution.
Let me get to the fairness opinion. What was the reasoning for the, well, it looked like there was somebody saying that, hey, we can do this. And then there was a decision made by Benefit Trust that we're not going to be in the business of giving fairness opinions any longer. So what happened?
Well, there were discussions about a possible refinance transaction at board meetings in September and December of 2014. There was no firm set of terms. There was no lender. There was no final set of terms. And there were discussions where Mr. Kaplan, who was working with Dansko for Benefit Trust Company, suggested how long it would take to do the kind of due diligence required for a trustee, but never accepted or never was asked until the December 9th board meeting, at which time Mr. Fox, on behalf of the board and as president of the company, asked Benefit Trust to engage as a directed trustee, but no terms were ever agreed to. There was no written agreement, which was required by 7.3, and Benefit Trust declined. Now, why, your implicit question is, why did this, sorry, my timer.
All right, no problem.
Why did Benefit Trust get out of this business? Well, the court may recall in the summer of 2014, the Great Bank decision, the process negotiations of the DOL, and many trust companies exited the market. Reliance did, and even the trust company that was engaged by Dansko to finish the transaction, which didn't close until June of 2015 and wasn't started until March of 2015, First Bankers Trust exited the market as well. The process, this settlement, as the court knows, changed the game for both discretionary and directed trustees, materially changing the risk factors.
Mr. Bean, sorry, I just have one follow-up question on something we talked about earlier. Your brief asserts that a contract can't be amended to add a new party, but what authority do you have for that proposition that an amendment can't accomplish that? I think earlier we were talking and you said it didn't matter. I didn't know if you were conceding that it could be done by amendment or if you have authority that it can't be.
I don't have authority okay. Other than what would have been stated.
That's fine. If it's okay with my colleagues, I do want to ask you a question about estoppel. One of your alternative grounds on estoppel is that, you know, estoppel can only be based on an express promise. Is there any Pennsylvania law that supports that assertion that you need an express promise? Pennsylvania case.
We had federal cases cited in the
You have a dictum from a Third Circuit case, but is there any Pennsylvania case that supports that?
Other than as stated in the brief, no.
And okay.
All right, I think that answers your question.
Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll get you back on rebuttal.
And very good.
We'll go to Mr. Hayes for Dansko.
Good morning. May it please the court. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Maybe just jumping around a little bit, with respect to the questions on the application of the integration clause, the integration clauses are temporal in nature. They only bar representations or other promises that were made prior to the execution of the agreement. And there's no question here that the trust agreement was executed in 2011 by Reliance and Dansko. It wasn't until 2014 that in any way Benefit became part of that transaction. So the only thing that would happen in terms of the only effect of the integration clause would be to still have the effect of saying that any representations and warranties that were made before Reliance and Benefit executed the agreement are barred. But it's
wait a minute. What I don't understand, you're saying that there was a 2011 trust agreement.
Correct.
Between Reliance and Dansko.
Correct.
3 years later, Reliance is out, Benefit Trust is in. How can you argue now that only parts of the agreement are binding and parts are not? The integration clause is still there, right?
Well, assuming for the moment that the integration clause is still there, it is temporal in nature and it only applies to representations and warranties that were made prior to the execution of the agreement in 2011. And we cited to the court two cases that held that as that so held in the connection of an amendment. The first was a Pennsylvania Superior Court case, Giant Food Services versus DHF Silver Spring Development. And in there in the court, I think it was a lease agreement. In an amendment to the lease agreement, the party specifically restated the integration clause or re-recognized the integration clause in the original lease. One of the parties brought a claim saying that they were misled into entering into the amendment to the lease. The other party claimed that those oral representations were barred by the integration clause, and the Pennsylvania Superior Court said it was not.
What troubles me is prior to this appeal, did Dansko give any indication that the 2011 trust agreement didn't govern the relationship of Benefit Trust in any way?
We're not saying that the amendment doesn't govern the relationship. What we're saying is if you take the integration clause on its face, at least it did for this point, we're saying if you take the integration clause on its face, all it does is apply to representations and warranties that were made prior to 2011. And as I said, I just cited to a court, the Pennsylvania Superior Court, which is an intermediate Pennsylvania appellate court on Pennsylvania law. And I would see no distinction between an amendment and some type of a substitution of a party. And the other thing I would like to say on that is that, in a way, the district court let Benefit have it both ways. You can't say that this is a new agreement and say that then all the terms of the prior agreement are included, and then at the same time say that you now have to incorporate into the agreement all the terms of the original trust agreement. And what Benefit doesn't acknowledge is that when the board resolution from Dansko was that it would be the substitute trustee, and that it would be part of the trust agreement. And Benefit Trust's acceptance of that was only stating to that it's accepted as the trustee. It does not accept the offer that it be part of the original agreement. And that's page 399 of the appendix. So if you're going to say, and the district court held that exchange created the contract. If that's the contract, then that's the contract. And the parties apparently intended that the terms and conditions, at least as to the obligations and duties of Benefit, would be incorporated into that contract. But that's different than saying that they're the same contract.
Mr. Hayes, so you're now making a very textual argument, and yet I don't follow, you don't seem to be as textual when it comes to Trust Agreement 9.9, the indemnification clause. Could I take you to that? I don't know if you have it handy, but open it up. I've got it in front of me. What language in 9.9 bars a first party indemnification?
How you define indemnity.
Okay, show me where I'm looking at it. Where is it in this language? So point me to the language.
There is no definition of indemnity. Okay,
there is no definition. There are no words in here that bar this claim.
Well, there is no definition of indemnity, but the word indemnity appears in the agreement.
Okay, so it's not a textual basis. You're saying indemnity has to mean or must mean something other than the first part. You have no text in 9.9 that supports this claim.
Well, I guess I would disagree, Your Honor. Maybe you don't
accept this. Point me to the words in here, unless it's just the use of the word indemnity and indemnification.
It is the use of the word indemnity.
Okay, and, about the word indemnity is inconsistent with a first party indemnity? Insurance policies give first party indemnities all the time.
Because one is that this court has held in Longport Ocean Plaza Inc. versus Robert Cato Associates that indemnity clauses are typically seen viewed as third party claims. The court in that case acknowledged that a indemnity could extend to a first party claim. But in that circumstance, the court said you'd have to be very clear in the agreement that that is intended. So directly answering your question, Your Honor, that's the basis. But the one thing that I would really would emphasize is this is not a first party claim. The typical first party claim is where A and B are parties to a contract. B breaches and that causes A damages. And so then A sues on a first party claim would be A suing B under the indemnity for the losses it sustained.
Okay.
What Benefit Trust here is wants us to indemnify us for our own claims.
Right. Now, Mr. Hayes, Benefit did not draft 9.9. Did you or your counsel draft 9.9? Because this was drafted before Benefit was on the scene.
This was drafted, according to the record, it was drafted by Reliance's counsel.
Okay, you were dickering over this language?
I don't recall of the record anything that says that we were dickering over this language. And I think Mr. Bean referenced Mr. Stoddard was a lawyer for Alliance and he drafted at least.
Okay, do you know where in the record that is? I'm just curious.
Mr. Stoddard, I don't have that in my mind exactly where, but it is in it is cited in the briefs, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's simply not a first party claim. And I would submit that most parties would not understand that they were held to reimburse somebody as the case goes on for claims they assert against that entity. And when you were talking about textual basis of the claims, you can't look simply at one clause of an agreement. Again, we cited the court, the Pennsylvania, as an example, Pennsylvania Supreme Court's case in Central Dolphins School District that held you have to look at the entire claim.
And what else in the rest of the agreement forecloses this if it's not just 9.9?
If you go through each of the provisions of those provisions, they would not have been written the way they are if it was intended that this would extend to a claim that Dansko brought against Benefit.
And can you point me to something in the text that's inconsistent with that?
Yes, let me give you one example. For instance, there is advancement provision, it states.
What number is that?
That is 9.0, Your Honor.
What?
9.10.
Okay.
Sorry, I said 9.0 by mistake. But in any event, it provides that, for example, that only reasonable attorney's fees would be reimbursed. So if you intended this claim to extend to Dansko's lawsuits against Benefit, you would have had some provision in there that says how you're going to deal with the reasonableness of the fees. As the court, is aware, what you normally do is present the actual billing statements. And nobody would have contemplated that I would never want to be giving my billing statements to another party in the middle of a litigation.
That's your best authority. Do you have anything else in the agreement?
It requires Benefit to give notice to Dansko of any claims asserted against it. And as the district court noted, that would not make any sense if in fact this was intended to extend the claims that Dansko was asserting against benefit.
Because it'd be superfluous to make it that broad, but it's not inconsistent. What number provision is that?
Well, it's really one of those subsections to 9.9, but it's part of 9.9.
Part of 9.9, okay.
It's actually, I can judge you more specifically.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Let me just see if I get this straight. 910, which says you got to reimburse, and I think in advance, ties into 9.9. So you have to have a claim under 9.9. And 9.9 requires Dansko to indemnify benefit trust for all expenses reasonably incurred, defending litigation or any claim whatsoever relating to benefit trust duties as trustee. What duty as trustee is involved here that is alleged?
The duty would be to undertake the fairness and what I have been calling the fairness analysis for you know, ease of reference, but basically to determine whether the restructuring was in the best interest of the plan. And it's not so much a breach of duty as a defense that it was performed negligently. They just refused to perform it at all.
So you don't dispute that the language, any and all claims, damages, expenses, liabilities, and losses whatsoever is about as broad as that phrase can be. You just think that it'd be absurd or contrary to the purpose to not to read in a limit claims brought by other parties, in essence.
Yes, and add to that, Your Honor, that I focus on the meaning of the word indemnity and how it's commonly understood. And again, with the third, that's how this court, the Third Circuit, has interpreted indemnity. And by the way, there has been no case cited by benefit where any indemnity clause of this nature was extended to a claim by the alleged indemnitor against the indemnity.
All right, so they've cited no case on that side. Have you cited any contrary case dealing with language like this?
Well, certainly not that specific language, but we have cited cases that interpret indemnity.
All right, so in other words, neither of you has a case on this fact situation. We just have to figure out what it means. This is not a standard form that's been interpreted in this context before.
Right, one of the things I would even look though, just direct the court, for instance, benefit, cites to Black's Law Dictionary for the definition of indemnity. And that what they cite is to reimburse another for a loss suffered because of a third party's or one's own act. So while that's broad enough to cover third party and first party claims, it's not broad enough. Their own definition is not broad enough to cover a claim by the indemnitor against the indemnity for the indemnity's own breach of contract.
Hey,
so,
let me ask you a question about your breach of contract claim.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it your position that you waived it by the language you use only seeks to proceed on its claim for breach of a duty of good faith and fair dealing?
No, Your Honor. We believe that maybe that was loose language, but that what was meant by that is just simply they were acknowledging that there is no express provision in the agreement that required benefit to perform that specific analysis. And what they were, I think what they argued in their brief is that duty arises under the contract by reason of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing. And we cited to the court, for instance, where they actually said that their main claim is for breach of contract. And you wouldn't, on one hand, say that's my main claim and then dismiss agree that that claim is no longer binding, you're not asserting it. So, and I would also look at the fact that both the allegation as to the breach of the implied duty of good faith and of express provisions of the contract were set forth in the same count of the complaint. And in their brief, they argued that if you, and we cite to the app in our brief, that they argued that if you, under the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing, that obligation exists under the contract. I mean, they specifically argued the point that the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing imposes duties that ought to be, it fills in the interstices of the agreement to fully flesh out the duties that the party has under the contract. And so I don't, I think it, you just wouldn't assert a claim and then at the same time waive it or adopt an argument to put you out of court. They weren't, they were making express factual admission, but they were not withdrawing the entire claim that had been asserted, the theory of action. And I think, with due respect to the district court, that it shouldn't have jumped on that. And I would submit that there was a little bit of jumping there to try to throw Dansko out of court on its breach of contract claim. I would submit, and I didn't write the underlying brief, so looking at it afresh, it just doesn't seem that that's what was intended.
Mr. Hayes, could you talk a little bit about C and K? We have this oddity where your opponent can't cite any Pennsylvania cases about express promises, but we have this language from C and K a while back that some district courts are relying on. What's your position on that? Is it dictum? Is it distinguishable?
So I do think it is dictum, but I would also say that it is distinguishable, Your Honor, because for a number of reasons. First and foremost, this was a trust relationship. Benefit acted as a fiduciary. And I would submit to the court that the rules that you apply in a commercial transaction, for instance, saying, you know, if you're negotiating the contract and you think something's important to you and you don't put it in the contract, that's on you, not on the other party. But that's a little different when you're talking about a trust agreement. I secondly would submit to Your Honor that it is distinguishable in the extent that the promissory estoppel claim is not based on pre-contract negotiations. It's all actions taken after the contract was executed, and it's based on leading Dansko to believe that, in fact, the obligation to perform the fairness analysis was within the scope of the obligations. And in fact, beyond that, I mean, Mr. Kaplan testified under oath. And at least at the time, he was benefits representative, not at the time of deposition, perhaps, but certainly at the time that he was involved in this, he was benefits representative. And he said, I understood we were going to prepare the fairness analysis.
This is how can you have a promissory estoppel claim when you have a contract?
Well, because it relates to activities after the contract was agreed to. And two, because it is a trust relationship, and three, where the cases in other jurisdictions have held you must have an express promise where the existence of a contract bars the claim, it was clear that that representation is not in the agreement. Where here, that's not clear at all. I mean, we think that the court should read the agreement to extend to that. But even if the court disagrees with that, it certainly is not clear whether it is or it isn't. So when you have your trustee, I mean, someone who has fiduciary obligations to you and the plan saying, we're going to do this, you're entitled to rely on that. Because a trustee has the utmost duty of candor. And it was not just this little, it was 6 months of activity. And I would also submit to the court that regardless of what the Third Circuit says in C&K, in that dictum statement, I don't think that dictum statement was intended to foreclose where someone's whole course of conduct, I mean, under the law, we recognize conduct can be the same as words. And if you're saying, I'm going to do the analysis, you participate in all the preparatory meetings, give advice and saying, hey, I think the owners are going to have to take a haircut on their warrants. You're leading up to it. And you don't say one word to ever suggest that you're not going to perform that analysis. I would think that you should then be barred from, I would submit to the court, you should then barred from saying you're not. And the other thing
how long was the delay once you found out the benefit trust was not going to give the fairness opinion until you closed the refinancing?
I believe it was between 4 to 6 months, if my recollection is correct. And the other thing I would say is, it's just, when you look at it, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, here you think about it. In 2014, we're hiring a new substitute trustee. We know we're going to do, or at least have plans to do the restructuring. We know we need the trustee to render what I call the fairness opinion.
Well, normally a fairness opinion least in the world that I once lived in, normally you get a fairness opinion either from an investment bank or perhaps an accounting firm, but not normally from a trustee.
So, and I recognize, I use that shorthand, but as I understand the process, what you need is the trustee to ultimately render the opinion that the restructuring is in the best interest of the plan participants. Now, it will go out and get a fairness opinion from I believe, a banker, and it will use that as one of the facts on to base its ultimate conclusion. And so instead of just saying, I just use fairness opinion as just kind of a shorthand for that rendering that ultimate opinion. And it just, you wouldn't have done that if you thought that the person, the entity you're hiring is not going to do that analysis, because now you got to go out and get somebody else. You go through all this due diligence. You have, now you settle on your substitute, pardon me, trustee. And now you have to go out and go get a whole other trustee. I just don't think.
So what relief are you asking from us?
We're asking the court to reverse to affirm benefits counterclaim.
I understand that.
To reverse on the breach of contract, the promissory estoppel, and the fraud claims, and to remand for a trial. Maybe the court would like me to sum up at this point, which is basically, I would submit to the court that all the issues we've been arguing as to what parties understood, whether it was reasonable for Dansko to rely on Benefit, whether Benefit committed to those types, committed to do the analysis in question, whether Dansko was completely misled by this, to even engage Dansko by reason of its express representations. And but you don't get too many fraud claims where the defendant admits that they made misstatements. All of those questions, Your Honor, I submit are for a jury to be decided after a full trial on the merits. Right. I thank the court for its attention to my argument.
Thank you. Mr. Bean?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few things, and I'll try to fill in some of the blanks from my argument and from Dansko's argument. As to Studdard's testimony, Your Honor, that appears at pages 29 and 30 of our opening brief. It's in the appendix at 258 and 259. And we quote his discussion of 9.9 and 9.10 in the brief in full. Well, not in full, at least that part of his testimony about it. As to the issue of waiver that was raised in the questioning, that is our position. The existence of, well, the language that Dansko used was not inadvertence, and it didn't maintain the contract argument. And the reason that the other thing that supports the language that the district court quoted in twice at pages 6 and 7 of the appendix is their failure to respond to any of our contract arguments in their opening brief. They knew they were going to lose that argument. They admitted those facts in the statement of facts as we cited in the appendix. They waived their breach of contract claim. And by waiving that, it's fatal to their second claim, breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Counsel has made much of our benefit trust role as a trustee and its fiduciary responsibility. And the answer to that is to whom? It is not a fiduciary to the settlor. It is a fiduciary to the plan participants. And it took no act in derogation of the plan participants' rights. If it had, then Dansko, wearing its other hat, wearing its plan fiduciary hat, would have had an obligation to bring claims on behalf of the plan participants if there were damages to the plan, and there weren't any. Judge Ambrose, as to your question about delay, here's the timeline. December the 9th, Benefit Trust gave notice to Dansko that it was not going to be able, or it was not going to accept an appointment as a discretionary trustee. Dansko did nothing until January. And in January, after the holidays, it began interviewing companies to replace Benefit Trust. Benefit Trust was replaced in mid-February by First Bankers Trust. But that agreement was only for a directed trustee agreement. First Bankers Trust was not engaged separately as a discretionary trustee until mid-March. And the And so the delay period was much of the delay was of Dansko's own doing. And then First Bankers Trust got to work on in its discretionary trustee capacity in March, and the transaction closed in mid-June of 2015. That's the timeline. My time has expired. I thank you very much for the opportunity to argue this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel, and we'll take the matter under advisement. And thank you.
I request a transcript?
Yes, you certainly may. Counsel, if you would have a transcript prepared and just split the cost.
We will do that, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much.